Welcome to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast all about stories of safety leadership, presented by Dale Carnegie and the Board of Certified Safety Professionals.
Shelley, one of the great things that happens on this podcast, we get to have people from a variety of different backgrounds that get them to the place they're at today. So we hear about the experiences they've had. And such is the situation with our guest who went from a military career into some other things and now into a career of safety. And you know this person.
It's so fascinating. So the beauty of connection as well. So I think all of the listeners are going to really enjoy this one. So I had the pleasure to be connected with Ty Farmer through another colleague of mine where I'm currently working. And so I think the listeners are in for a real, real treat with this one today.
Sure. So Ty, you grew up in Virginia.
Yes.
And eventually you had a career in the military. Could you just tell us a little background of that?
I'm from Hampton, Virginia. And for those of you who know the Tidewater area, that's the center of the universe. And that's what I like to say. As growing up there, I didn't even realize it was a military community. But when I graduated from high school and I transitioned into college, I was the recipient of an ROTC scholarship.
Yeah.
So I went to North Carolina A&T State University, Aggie Pride for those listeners out there who went to North Carolina A&T. And I started, you know, just learning as much as I can learn, understanding that I came from a very disciplined environment.
Were your parents involved with a family involved in the military?
My parents, to a certain extent, yes. My mother was the number one alterationist at Fort Monroe, Virginia. So, networks. She had established a network that I didn't even know about. So when I applied for my ROTC scholarship, who was the person leveraging their network to help me make sure I had a solid application and transition out of high school into college? My mother. And so, you know, little things you pick up along the way when you're growing up, you're like, oh, my mother and my father are doing this. My mother and my father are doing that. And I started picking up those habits and started building my network through high school, through college, and things of that nature. So that military environment and just a solid family environment in which I grew up in really set the stage for who I am today.
Fascinating. So you, how many years did you spend in the military?
I was in the military for 8 years, and some of the most rewarding 8 years of my life.
In what way?
Leaving home as a young man and then going into the military. During that time, I got married, had 3 kids, and then wanted still to pursue my education. So I did an awful lot in a short period of time. And as you do more, you start to learn more about yourself and you start to grow even more. But where I received the most growth is when it came to mentoring and coaching others. In the military, as a military commissioned officer, your job is to ensure the health and welfare of your soldiers. And through that process of making sure that everyone is taken care of, you need to know who you're working with. You need to know your soldiers. You need to know what drives them on a daily basis and make sure you can provide that drive that they need. But you also need to understand what they need and how to help them get what they need out of life. So as a basic training company commander in the United States Army, I had the opportunity to have all these young adults from all parts of the country come together and create a team. And didn't know that that was my thing, but through the military, I figured that out. And that's when I started building my own confidence as a leader. And so the United States Army, my parents, the church I grew up in, the community I came from, all those things, all those environments and all those groups helped to form me as a leader.
You were a prepared man for a prepared situation.
I would like to think so.
Yes, indeed.
And thank you for your service, by the way.
Thank you.
Really appreciate that. Wow. What a background.
Military, and then somehow you got into the safety field. How'd you make that leap?
That's an interesting story, but it's all about taking advantage of the opportunities that come your way. Mm-hmm. I truly believe there are not too many people who go to school saying, or go to college saying, I want to be a safety leader. There are some who do, but a lot of safety professionals I've come across in my past, we all fell into this
role. So what triggered you to get into that?
Going back to, I'm a people person. Going back to, I love bringing teams together. I love supporting teams, and I love finding out what teams need to drive themselves forward. And so my transition out of the military into GE, General Electric created a junior officer leadership program. This was a program to capitalize on junior officers leaving the military, but taking those leadership skills that we learned and that we had in us to see how we can transition those skills to corporate America. So a lot of corporate leadership programs, you have rotational programs. It's almost a situation of, let's help you figure out what you want to do when you grow up. So my first rotation was an IT rotation. It took me every bit of 2 days to realize I'm not an IT guy. I am not an IT guy.
Come on, Kat.
Well, at least you found your, yeah. You found, cross that one off.
You're not exactly. Made to just sit behind a.
I'm not made for it at all. And so I finished out the rotation, but the win was I knew what I didn't want to do. So I wanted to recalibrate. I wanted to re-energize. I said, let me go to a function that I feel fairly comfortable in.
And did you have some choice in this?
Oh, I had a lot. Okay. You name it, I have the choice.
Okay.
From HR to, you know, various operations to safety to they gave us a laundry list of options. And as I looked up and down the list, EHS stuck out because it was about taking care of people. As it was explained to me when I was asking about what does this function do, what does that function do? So I said, let me go to a comfort zone. Let me take care of people. And I did exactly that. My second rotation was an EHS rotation. And it just so happens within General Electric, they were getting into the oil and gas industry. And they had just acquired a company within that industry, and they didn't have an EHS leader within that newly acquired company. So I stepped in as a place filler, so to speak. It was learn what EHS is, help out the organization, and after your rotation, move on to a different rotation. But we all know how things just happen and opportunities happen. So I took on a role. The role turned into a regional role, but the region wasn't just one or two territories. The region was Mexico, the U.S., and Canada.
Oh,
huge region. So talk about being thrown into the fire.
So no real background, but I'm sure you had some people guiding you, but you're doing a lot of learning on your own.
Exactly. I had a team of people who supported me being in that role in that capacity. And so, again, building relationships and getting people to trust you, like you, and think more of you than you think of yourself at certain times, I had a support team who said, you can do this. Whatever you need, just give me a call. Now, that's the big thing right there. Whatever you need, give me a call. Depending on who you are and how you're raised as a leader, some people think a great leader doesn't need help.
Were you trying to prove what you were without?
During my first real role in corporate America as an EHS leader, I thought the more I did on my own without needing a support system, the more of a leader I was going to be or be perceived as. Didn't realize that the less you ask, the further back you're pushing yourself. And as a result of me being a newbie in EHS, trying to get people to like me, but also get people to respect me as a leader, I didn't ask a whole lot of questions. I didn't have pick up the phone enough to say, this is the issue. I think I need to solve it like this, but I wanted to get your advice on what steps I need to take. I didn't do enough of that.
And did that lead you to some problems or challenges?
It absolutely did. I was put on a performance improvement plan very early in my career.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
You're on a banana peel about to slip out.
Exactly.
And for what reason?
Because I wasn't solving the true problems that I needed to solve. I wasn't providing the results that I should have been facilitating within the organization. I wasn't communicating the way I should have been, keeping my leaders and my partners involved and abreast of everything that was going on. I wasn't meeting the expectations when it came to certain audits, certain compliance results.
Now, I'm going to make a guess that in your life, you had rarely ever been on a disciplinary track. Would that be?
Exactly. I was an overachiever. I'm a middle child. And middle children, and for those of you who are middle children, you know that we're inherently overachievers. And so, again, I had always been successful, always an overachiever, and thought I was doing the right thing until I was slapped in the face.
And what did that do to you emotionally?
It took me down a couple of steps. But I will say this. I saw it as a gift for someone, for a leader who I worked for, to actually stop, create a performance improvement plan, and then send out and have a conversation with me to tell me exactly why. Some people can see that as, well, I'm out the door, or some people can see it as a gift. I'm a glass half full type of guy. So I saw that as, okay, oh, I understand now. I should be calling you, you know, periodically to keep you up to date on what I'm doing. I should be ensuring that I'm asking for your blessing on certain moves I'm making just to make sure that we're going in the right direction. So the leader who I worked for, and by the way, this leader was in Europe. I was in the U.S. My direct manager was in Europe. There are a lot of, you know, things you got to navigate to create a relationship, but I had a leader who trusted me enough to say, I'm going to put you on the performance improvement plan. It's up to you how you move from this point.
So what happened next?
Well, he gave me a very detailed performance and improvement plan, and a key aspect of that plan was we need to talk more. And don't wait on me to call you. Give me a call whenever you have any question at all. And so that opened my eyes to building relationships. That opened my eyes to no one man or woman can create any program or resolve an issue on their own. It takes a community, it takes a village to make this happen. And the first person in that community should always be your immediate leader, your immediate manager, your immediate supervisor, because you got to work together so that you can meet that person's objectives, that person's goals, but also so you can just gain insight, experience, and better understand the bigger picture of what you're working in.
Well, you know, I'm not sure everyone would have viewed that situation the same way you took it, but it's really admirable how you said, you know, glass half full type of guy. You know, and that really says a lot about, you know, your character and being able to really analyze situations wholly and not just ball yourself up into a shell and, like you said, want to leave and, you know, go start somewhere else.
Exactly. And I'll tell any one of my leaders, when someone gives you a gift, the question is, what are you going to do with that gift? And that you may not want the gift at that particular time, but that opportunity is a gift. What are you going to do with that opportunity?
So you started to make changes, started to make adjustments, started having communication. Quickly, turn things around? Slowly?
Yeah, to be honest, it was quick because that first conversation opened my eyes to the things I wasn't aware of. I wasn't privy to. Communication. Everything starts and ends with communication. And if you're not communicating to the powers that be, whether it's your peers, whether it's your team members who work for you, or whether it's the leaders who you're working for and supporting, if you're not communicating, then you're just way behind the power curve. So I realized, you know, you can work as hard as you want to, but if nobody knows what you're doing, it doesn't matter. So that communication facilitates everyone understanding the bigger picture and understanding how you're contributing to that.
So what did it do, not just, Ty, for your boss, but for also these other people who were looking up to you? What do you think was the benefits that came to them when all of a sudden you started making changes?
I believe you lead by example. And I believe if you're outwardly communicating with everyone, from the president or the CEO to the company to the front line, people will see what you're doing, but sometimes everyone doesn't see the same thing. Everyone can be looking at one thing and see five different interpretations of that one thing. As a leader, you have to sometimes be blunt. I'm communicating with you as a team for a reason, and actually make that statement. When you're talking to executives that you support, I want to have a meeting because, you know, and you always give the why. So what I've learned is, first of all, over communicate, but while you're communicating, ensure that the why is a part of that message that you're communicating. And so my team members now know, if you're working with me or working for me, let's talk about it. But what do you think the why is, and make sure you're clearly communicating why you're so passionate about something, why you think we need to make the change, or why you think we need to continue whatever we're doing. I want to know your why. I have my why, but if you don't know why, then you're just working in circles.
So you stayed with GE for a while, and then you moved on. Why would you leave the great GE?
I would say the first thing is, working for a company, a large organization like General Electric, you have a lot of resources, and you have everything at your fingertip. You know, all the leadership support, all the mentoring, all the resources. But aside of being a great leader is, what do you do when you don't have all those resources at your fingertips? When you actually have to roll up your sleeve and start doing a lot of things that you can easily call someone else to do. And so I realized at a certain point in my career, if I wanted to be a better leader, I need to broaden my skill set, my proficiencies. And so going to a smaller company where there wasn't a safety program at all allowed me to really test myself on, do you really know the safety thing? If you know the safety thing, then prove to yourself that you know the safety thing. So I went to a smaller company by the name of Power Grid Engineering. At the time, I was employee 151, which scared me to death because I came from...
It's far different from GE.
In the United States Army. Part of these large organizations, now going to a smaller organization where you're 151, you would think starting a safety program or EHS program would be easy. But if you don't have anybody else supporting you and no one even knows how to spell EHS, mm-hmm. you got to really roll up your sleeve and start flexing on communication, flexing on influencing, flexing on partnering with other individuals who may not necessarily believe in your function, and influencing them to personalize what we do on a daily basis. Safety is a personal thing. Safety, every time I open my mouth as a safety leader, it's going to cost you money, it's going to cost you time, but it's going to save you lives. So getting everyone to understand that, but that's easier said than done. No one wants to die, no one wants to hear about an amputation, and everyone wants to make money. How can I influence individuals that safety is a core value, and it needs to be a strong core value? How can I influence top-level leaders who are trying to make money that we need to slow down to really embrace this core value that I know they believe in, but I got to help them understand it better so that they can make more money?
Now, many of our folks are very active and yet sometimes feel bound that they are not able to guide their leadership. What's a couple of thoughts you'd have from your experiences that you could help people with?
Get to know your leadership first. Understand what they believe in. Understand what their core values are. Understand what their needs are. And after gathering all these data points, figure out how you can contribute to where they want to go and what they need, but also figure out how you can weave your priorities, your values into what they're trying to do. Again, every company owner, every person wants everyone to go home safely. I truly believe that. And I know everyone believes that. Also, everyone wants to make money. I truly believe that. I know everyone wants to make more money. How can I figure out how you can make more money, but all your workers go home safely? Because if they don't go home safely, all that money you want to make, you're not going to be making that money. So let's figure out how we can make this thing work together. You achieve your goals, but we also achieve the holistic goal of everyone being in a trusting environment, working safely, and going home safely each and every day.
So it sounds like what you did was you had the insight to say, because some people say, well, we just have to have people be safe. That's it. That's number one. And it's valuable. But you looked at the what the other person was important to them. And there's a principle Carnegie gives is talk in terms of the other person's interest. So you found a way to say, because you took time to find out what made them tick, and then you worked toward their interest, which helped the whole.
Exactly. I am a true believer that safety, or EHS in general, is a leading indicator to operational excellence. A lot of operational leaders don't realize that. They don't realize that, and this is just my opinion and only my opinion, a lot of operational leaders don't realize that if you have workers who are working in a trusting environment, they're going to work harder. If you have workers who know that their leaders are doing everything possible so that they can work safely, they're going to work harder. If you have workers who know that they have quality equipment and that they're actually getting in trouble if they're not working safely, they're going to work harder and they're going to do the right things more often because that's the environment we all want to work in. However, if I work in an environment where I know the right way to do it is like this, but my boss is telling me, you know, do it otherwise or take shortcuts, it's gonna taint the way in which I, you know, embrace the environment I'm working in. So I will tell any leader, safety is a leading indicator to operational excellence. If you create a safe environment, then you're gonna create trusting workers, you're gonna create happy workers, and they're gonna work that much harder to make you more money. So it will behoove us all to really embrace safety, establish it as a core value, and ensure that everyone is happy and they trust the environment in which we're working.
So I love you're speaking my language with it being a core value. And, you know, often I'll have conversations about, is safety a priority or is safety a value? Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think we've all heard this before. Priorities change on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
If it's raining, my priority is to get to the car without getting water on my head. If it's sunny outside, my priority is to get to the car and get in the car that's cool. So depending on what goes on in your environment, your priorities change. But safe, this whole thing about going home safely and keeping everyone, you know, happy, it can't change. It has to be the number one thing you think about when you go to sleep, when you wake up. It's part of the DNA of what you do and how you do it. So priorities change on a daily basis depending on what's going on and what your customers want. But core values are constant all the time.
Have you ever been in a situation where you found any leaders that have been struggling with it being a core value? And how did you handle that?
I will first say, I think some people in general, when you say it's like tomato, tomato, core value, priorities, some people don't really understand the difference between the two. So you really got to have that conversation about, you know, is this a priority or is this a core value? And again, depending on who you're talking to, they may not understand why you're even asking that question. But when individuals are struggling, with priorities and how to ensure that certain priorities remain a priority. It really goes, in my opinion, it goes back to the why question. Understand the why behind the issue or the dilemma. And then according to the answer with that why, then you establish your priorities and then do a double check to figure out if the core value is still that core value according to the why. I wish I can give you a scenario, but I'm always asking the question, so why? Why are we doing this and what do we need to achieve? And if that's when we then establish our core values, or more importantly, that's when we establish our priorities, and then we double check to make sure the core values are still a solid core value.
I often call it the why behind the what. What's the why behind the what? You know, and then I think a lot of that we can look at decision making. So, and really challenge leaders, if we feel like some decision making might be off kilter, we can maybe do a quick check and see, you know, is our value for safety remaining consistent or maybe even increasing through the decision we're making? And if it's lowering, then we're probably not making the right decision.
And as EHS leaders, safety leaders, we have to be the devil's advocate to when there's an operational issue being discussed or a resolution being developed. We have to be the devil's advocate, whatever you want to give that title, of making sure that we're not minimizing the EHS value or the safety value just to get this problem resolved or to achieve this problem. A perfect example is emergency work. When customers call you because they have an emergency job and they need to get back online immediately, There are certain leaders who may think of, let's get them back online. Don't worry about the safety checks. Don't worry about the, you know, job safety analysis.
We don't have time for that.
We don't have time for all of that. But if safety is a core value, you shouldn't be turning a screwdriver or putting a wrench on anything until you've gone through all your solid, established, institutionalized safety checks to execute that job.
Now, Ty, that company, you were employee 151, but it grew rapidly.
Absolutely. Within 5 years, we grew from 150-odd employees to 1,200 employees.
So my question is, do you have a seat at the table? And how, everybody says, I want a seat at the table. Help us understand how you got that. What goes into that? Because people are dying to know.
I'm very fortunate that I've always worked for leaders who understood the value of EHS, the value of safety. So I've always had a seat at the staff meeting table. Some days I may not have anything to produce or anything to communicate. However, I was there under listening to and understanding the operation. I do run into a lot of peers who may not have seats at the table. And that's still an ongoing discussion of how to influence the right leaders to at least invite them in the room so that they can hear the discussions. Again, as safety is a leading indicator, if I understand that there's a contractual issue, I may not be able to directly solve it, but if I understand that there's an issue with a certain customer for a certain reason, first of all, I can make sure I don't contribute to that issue. But secondly, maybe I've experienced something with another company where they've solved the issue and I can bring that tidbit of knowledge to the table within a staff meeting. Additionally, a lot of ops leaders, are still seeing safety as, or EHS as like the last pin in, the last thing to do to finalize a project. When I'm trying to influence leaders, that's one of the first things you need to think about when creating your project. So I can be the devil's advocate in a staff meeting to just say, well, has anyone thought about this? Just to bring safety back up to the forefront. for those leaders who are still having trouble getting a seat at the table, the first thing that I would advise any leader is, first of all, just have the open, honest discussion with your leader. And really, it's just a humble request. Do you mind if I sit in a staff meeting? I may not have a lot to say, but I would love to learn more about the operation. I would love to learn more about the business. There are very few leaders who are going to deny that humble request for professional development. And then once you do the Jedi mind trick and get in the room, then you can start slowly but surely dropping, exposing your leaders to the expertise that you do bring to the table and how you can contribute to the operation, not just in the EHS or the safety arena, but maybe in the quality arena, maybe in the accounting arena, or, any other department. I see safety professionals, EHS professionals as company leaders.
Well, let's delve into that quite a bit, because that's a pretty important topic. Talk to us more.
Once you get the seat at the table, a safety leader or EHS leader can then demonstrate their leadership proficiencies, their leadership capabilities by contributing to the conversation that may not be a safety conversation or EHS conversation. And the one thing I know, and I know this very well, safety leaders, because we have conversations with the C-suite, with middle management, with frontline on a daily basis, we actually have an awesome power of influence that a lot of other departments, a lot of other leaders may not have, because we touch so many people so often on a daily basis. And as a great EHS leader, safety leader, knows how to flex the conversation to appeal to the audience he or she is talking to at the time. If you're talking to your C-suite, they want bullet points, they want high level, but they want to know what the final result is going to be. If you're talking to middle management, a great safety leader knows how to flex the conversation to talk about a little bit more about the how. But if you're talking to the front line, flexing the conversation a little bit more, focusing on the what and what is it going to do for you. And so because on any day I can talk to the CEO, my VP, a manager, and the front line all in the same day about the same topic, that's something that a lot of department leaders don't have that opportunity. And that's a huge opportunity. Going back to opportunities, you can see it as a burden or opportunity. I see that as an opportunity to really show what we are made of as safety or EHS professionals.
And I think it's great how you talk about making that humble request, because I've heard so many times from especially younger safety leaders who might not have that seat at the table yet. And my first question is, have you asked? Yeah, so, maybe you could talk about any advice or ideas for younger safety professionals who maybe don't have that seat at the table yet. How can they get the courage if they're even too scared to have that conversation?
The first thing I would say, ask. Something that has happened to me recently on LinkedIn, I made a site visit, and I didn't really talk to the frontline worker, but she reached out to me via LinkedIn and said, I didn't get a chance to, have a lot of conversations with you, but I want to, follow up with you later on. Humble request. And what leader is going to deny that request when someone takes on their personal time to make that request? So just asking is definitely the first step. But once you ask, be careful what you ask for, because you're going to get it. And then be prepared for the conversation once that conversation is initiated. Have your list of five questions. How did you get to this point in your career? What were some of the challenges? Were you ever on a PIP? Things of that nature, just to understand the other, focus on the other person. So then they will develop a level of interest in you, and then they can focus on you. That will always be my advice for a young safety professional.
And how vital is that? I think you're saying working upward, but even at all levels, to take the time, whether you want to call it developing relationship, we use that phrase a lot. What have you found about developing relationships with people along the way, and how vital has that been to your career?
I mentioned this earlier. My mother showed me the power of developing relationships. You know, my mother, you know, altered, you know, top level military leader uniforms. She obviously had a number of conversations with a number of generals for me to be where I am today. And so no matter who you are, whether you're talking to the CEO of a company or talking to the brand new employee who was just hired yesterday, that level of taking interest in people and understanding that everyone matters can take you a long way, because the person that's working for you today, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be working for them later on in life. So understand that. But I've learned so much more from the frontline workers just you know, sitting down at lunch, eating a sandwich, and having conversations about where did you come from? You know, why do you do it like, and, you know, having those conversations where we then evolve to what can I do to make sure you're having a more successful day? And then they're giving me some real hardcore notes about, well, we need to get a better, you know, we need to get better safety glasses. Something as simple as that, because the safety glasses rubbing my nose, you know, rub the edge of my nose. That's information that if I didn't sit down to have that sandwich or have that Mountain Dew with a frontline worker, I would never have found out that type of information. And that's the stuff that matters when you want certain individuals to trust the environment. If you're having the conversations, take the information that they're providing and show them that you're doing something with this information.
So here's a principle of Carnegie. Be a good listener. Encourage others to talk about themselves. What's, you kind of alluded to it, but what's the gold of that? What's the great gain?
From my perspective, the gain is, first of all, they're going to give you a lot of great information about the operation that you would never know unless they gave you that information. But additionally, you're building that level of trust where one day you're not even going to ask for suggestions. They're just going to come to you, Ty, I got a suggestion for you. And that's the environment you want to create, where people are openly giving out information so that you can improve the operation. And it's now not just the safety team wanting to improve the operation. It's everyone wanting to improve the operation.
But you're taking the initiative to do that. You're just not waiting for everybody to come to you. You said, hey, let's sit down and eat with you. Hey, you got a minute for a Coke or coffee or whatever like that. The initiative. How valuable is the initiative?
Very valuable, because if I call it, I say this all the time, I want to create the pool within the organization where the resources are there, and I could push the resources on you all the time, but I'm trying to create an environment where people are asking me for more resources, and they're pulling for more resources. With that said, creating that open environment and making sure that people feel like they're a part of that environment, they're going to want to come. They want to give you more and more and more, because everyone wants to be a part of that winning team. Everyone wants to contribute to a winning team. And as a great leader will create that environment where I'm going to get you all hyped up that we're going to be winners, and I need your help to be a winner. And if I can keep that enthusiasm going with the team, then we're creating that pool where people are contributing suggestions on how to get better. They're actually looking to their left and looking to their right to say, hey, let's not do it like this. Let's pause, let's think about it, and then let's talk about how we're going to do this action safer, where it doesn't take the safety leader in the field to pause, stop. People are doing it on their own, or teams are doing it themselves.
Because it's not one safety leader, now you've developed this environment where all can be a safety leader.
That's right. I often say every day my goal is to work myself out of a job to where everybody's doing my job, right? What? How beautiful would that be?
That would be amazing.
And because a part of that is another principle, is let the other person feel like the idea is his or hers. So it's not that, nothing personal here, it's not that Ty is the brains of the safety. Ty is the one that lets the other people give their ideas.
Exactly.
And then they feel ownership.
Well, okay, can we just talk for a moment? What would ever keep any of us from wanting to do that? Why? Because we meet some safety professionals that haven't figured that out. What keeps us back from that?
In my opinion, and only my opinion, some people hadn't seen what right looks like yet. Depending on who you are and what environments you've worked in the past, some individuals will mimic what they've seen. And if they hadn't seen what right looks like, they're just going to keep mimicking what they've, that authoritarian type leadership style, do it my way, don't ask any questions, just do it the way I told you to do it. I've been fortunate enough, being in the military, working with General Electric, working with Power Grid Engineering, working with Quality Power Services, working with DICOM Industries, that we have leaders who will ask the question, how do you think we should do this? And people actually respond. So I've been fortunate to work in those environments where I've seen what right looks like, and I've seen what appeals to me, and I've been able to mimic those positive behaviors.
But there will be some people that will say, yeah, but if I say, what do you think? They'll come up with these wild hair ideas that are just crazy. How do we help people? How do we respond to that when people give ideas and they mean well, but maybe they're just not the right timing, they're not the right. How do you help people respond to that?
Everyone has a voice. Everyone has a concern. Everyone has an issue. And with that said, my advice is to always hear the suggestion, hear the issue, understand how we're going to position that information for future use. And that's kind of a phrase that I would say often. Great idea. And I like it a lot. Let's put a pin in that right there, and let's make sure that we don't lose it so that we can bring it back into the fold when we get to the next phase or the next stage or the next effort.
I like it. So prioritizing, but making sure they feel heard. It's on the list. It's not falling into the black hole. I think a lot of times that's really important too, just so they acknowledge they've been heard and that you've got it down. And I think being honest about that as well. We can't always do everything that everyone wants to do right in the moment. And I think it's important to be honest and transparent about that too.
Exactly. I think a lot of people have seen the parking lot tool, where you're having conversations when ideas come up, you create a parking lot to make sure that the idea is captured there in writing to ensure that the audience sees that we heard you and we're capturing this. And then we bring the parking lot, every time we have a meeting, bring the parking lot back up to the forefront, and maybe certain things come off the parking lot due to, the discussion or due to implementing those ideas. But that parking lot tool is the best way for me to let everyone know I heard you loud and clear, and I value your feedback, so we're going to put it in the parking lot. It may take another 6 months before we address it, but I just want to let you know that parking lot is still here and your valuable feedback is still being considered.
And I think most people will appreciate the idea that not everything can be done at once, and the timing of a change isn't essential, because maybe you're in a big movement right now and it's just not the right timing. But having the conversation to talk to the person lets them know, as you said, Shelley, I've been hurt, because that's where people get really bent out of shape. Well, I turned in a great idea to me, but they didn't do a thing.
It went nowhere.
And so don't waste your time, everybody else. But this is wisdom, and this is valuing people or individuals.
In my opinion, ensuring that everyone understands that they are valuable, that their opinions matter, that their effort and their engagement really matters, is really, in my opinion, that's the cheat code to creating an incredible EHS program, safety program, or just creating an incredible work environment. Everyone who's here, you're here for a reason. We hired you for a reason. So we want all the goodness we can get out of you so that we can improve as a team. Making sure that everyone clearly understands that that's a number one goal of mine.
And would that kind of thing have to be not just said once, but shown over and over? And tell us a little more about continuing that. How do you keep to let people know, not just one time, hey, Charlie, man, you're great, man, you're wonderful, which is pretty weak. How do you do that to keep that going?
Well, I often start and or end my meetings with, I appreciate everything you do. You got a hard job, and I appreciate the progress that you've made thus far. That statement, I think, goes a long way when it comes from leaders, because there's a lot of stuff going on good that leaders don't know. And so just reaffirming that if you're feeling good about what you're doing, I know that what you're doing is not easy. And so for me, I started in my meetings like that. I appreciate everything you do. I appreciate your engagement, because I know your job is not easy. And then when you have the one-off conversations, you find out some more about what's going on in their world that you didn't know about. And you're asking the questions like, tell me about a big win you had. And we got to have the problem solving part of the conversation eventually. But before I start the conversation, let me get the positive stuff out there so that when we get to the problem solving, we can feel a little bit better about the conversation, because ultimately my heart is making sure you're happy. My heart is making sure we're happy. So let's talk about that stuff first. And I think that goes a long way with my team. It goes a long way with the individuals I interact with, because there's a lot of negative stuff out here. I don't need to contribute to that laundry list.
Again, back to a Carnegie principle, begin with honest, sincere appreciation. Doesn't mean we can't address the not so good, but too many people just, that's all they're used to is talking about. We just beat them over the head that not doing the best thing, and forget to acknowledge the wins and the good things.
And one of the things I love about that is I think the more you practice that, the easier it becomes to identify the positives that everyone is doing, because there's a whole lot that people are doing right every day, but we tend to hone in on what the gaps are. Where aren't we doing as great as we could? But we also have to be sure we're recognizing the positives.
Exactly. And there are individuals out there that don't think we should talk about the positives, because their rationale is, that's what I get my paycheck for every week, you know, because I'm doing this stuff. But in my eye, I need to know the positive. I'm the kind of person, I got to work in a positive environment. If I'm working in a negative environment, you're not going to get anything out of me. So I want to make sure that, first of all, I'm in a positive environment, but I want to make sure everyone understands this is what I want. This is what I expect out of everyone. Let's be positive. Let's see that glass is half full, and work together to figure out how we can fill it up all the way.
You know, again, a Carnegie principle is be hearty in your approbation. Well, nobody knows what approbation means, but it means stamp of approval. Be hearty in your stamps of approval and lavish in your praise. And again, because that lets people know I am being noticed. They don't just see the bad. They see the good.
Exactly. And I can say this, and my wife would kill me for saying it, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Oh, yeah. Mrs. Ty, we'd love you to be listening in on this.
When raising our kids younger, my wife is the nurturer, and I was the disciplinarian in the family. So whenever I spoke about taking out the trash, it wasn't necessarily a positive conversation. I was like, why didn't you take out the trash? While my wife, the nurturer, she would be like, oh, you took out the trash? Thank you for taking out the trash. I owe you a nice, huge piece of dessert, you know, for dinner. So we found out, we realized that our kids would go out of their way to show their mother that they were doing the chores, but they will avoid me like the plague when it came to, you know, doing anything. Because that positive spirit that my wife was giving the kids on a daily basis, it affirmed that they're good people. It affirmed that they're actually contributing to the household, and they wanted to continue affirming that. However, with the father, and you know, you as parents, you grow with the tools you had. So by me scolding the kids for not taking out the trash, they would continue to avoid me. So that's when I realized, when you go to work, be positive. When you go to work, make people want to, you know, be positive themselves, because then you're going to have those positive conversations. People are going to start doing more and being more productive.
So positive child rearing tips by Mr. and Mrs. Farmer, along with leadership tips from that.
And how was that for you? Because in the military, it's different, correct? So how was it for you maybe making that shift?
My father was a farmer, so I grew up in a very disciplined household. Going to the military is a very disciplined environment. However, the community, the personal community that I created in the military helped me better navigate how to better understand discipline. Discipline is not a hammer. Discipline is just being consistent. And it was my personal community helping me to navigate the military protocols, and then my personal community helping me make that transition out of the military into corporate America, where I really had to understand that discipline is not a hammer. Discipline is just being consistent. And so it took a lot of years. It took a lot of beers and bar talk, but eventually it became very natural to me. And it helped me understand why certain people are very hardcore about discipline. And it helped, you know, and it gave me more tools on figuring out how I didn't actually have to be that hardcore to establish discipline and to be disciplined.
So Ty, our time's going to be away from us in a moment. And you have an opportunity here in a few moments, to really be able to share your heart and your soul. And I know you've said, well, it's my opinion, but we value your perspective. And from your perspective, what are some ideas you could share with the safety professionals? You've got newer people listening. You've got people who are veterans. From your soul, what could you say to help and encourage folks?
The number one thing I will say to any young safety professional, any safety professional, develop genuine relationships, especially with the operation leaders that you're working with and supporting and working for. They need to know you, not just how you operate in the work environment, but they need to know you as a person. People who are liked can influence a whole lot of stuff. And I don't have to love you, but if I like you and I can relate to you and I can have a steak with you, if I have a good conversation with you, then I'll listen to you. And I may not agree with you, but I will listen to you. So I wish someone had told me this when I was in college. Build all the relationships you can. don't try to get everyone to like you because everyone's not going to like you. However, build those relationships that people will listen to you and respect you, because that openness, that respect will allow you to influence. And really, that's the only tool that we have as safety professionals, the power of influence. If I can influence you to at least consider an option or consider a resolution, I've done my job. So to influence anyone, they have to know you. And for them to know you, you have to initiate that relationship building opportunity.
That is so wise, because relationships are the oil that lubricates the engine. Relationships are like the part that makes things go smoother. Doesn't mean we're always going to be happy campers, but what you said there about likability, I heard it said once that the reason people follow what doctors tell them to do is not because of their expertise, not because of the paper on the wall, but their likability. And safety professionals need to realize likability is a thing that really holds us back from people being willing to listen and to let us influence.
Well, thank you so much, Ty, for taking some time out with us today.
Yes.
Such an awesome experience.
Sharing your experiences and your life story.
I thank you both for the invite, the opportunity, and hopefully it'll be this opportunity is a gift for someone else.
Exactly. Thank you. Here's a man that took his life experiences of military, home life growing up, and things like that, and translated them into successfully leading people in the realm of safety. We were both jotting down ideas and notes rapidly. What's something that really stood out to you as he talked?
You know, there were so many things, but, you know, I think one of the initial key takeaways in what he discussed today was really just his power of self-reflection, and not even when he was challenged with a performance improvement plan or guidance feedback, not letting that derail him, but really taking a look at how it can be a gift and let it drive him for further development.
Which really reminds us, it's all the response that we have toward looking at a situation.
Absolutely.
And for me, Shelley, when he talked about that, having the humble request, could I sit in on the meetings? Could I be a part? I'd like to learn, and I'd like to get to know you a bit better. That idea of the humble request, because oftentimes we have not because we ask not. We don't take the time or the willingness or the daringness to ask. And it's amazing how that can open up doors.
Absolutely. And displaying that, you know, he talked about how important in every aspect communication overall is, whether it's the ask or with our employees or our peers or leaders around us, just being sure we're always communicating and over communicating, and we can use that skill set anywhere.
So get out of the office, talk to the people. Great stuff from Ty.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast produced in partnership by Dale Carnegie and BCSP, with your hosts, Dale Carnegie Master Trainer Merle Heckman and Shelley Baber, EHS Director of Electrical Engineering Services and Systems Division at Eaton. Executive produced by Nathan Wilson, produced by Joel Burgai, directed by Giachi Liu, edited by Jared Griot and Kyla Anderson, editorial support from Brandon Mohaupt, social media support from Braylon Morgan and Crystal Keithley. Consulting producers are Colin Brown and Mark Sullivan. To have new episodes delivered directly to you, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you'd like to share your story of a safety leadership challenge you've faced, email us at info@mybigsafetychallenge.com. See you next time.